Good afternoon. Welcome to the National Press Club. My name is Clayton Boyce, and I'm president of the National Press Club and news editor of the Knight Ridder Tribune News Service. I'd like to welcome club members and their guests in the audience today, as well as those of you who are watching on C-SPAN or listening to this program on National Public Radio or the Global Internet Computer Network. Before introducing our head table, I'd like to remind our members of some upcoming speakers. Tomorrow, South African President F.W. de Klerk will present a speech entitled South Africa on the Threshold of Democracy. Next Wednesday, Rich Trumka, the president of the United Mine Workers Union, will speak on organized labor's battle to rebound in the 1990s. And on Thursday, July 8th, Marvin Runyon, Postmaster General of the United States, will speak. Other upcoming luncheon speakers include opera singer Jose Carreras, Secretary of Health and Human Services Donna Shalala, Secretary of Transportation Federico Pena, and the Director of the National Hurricane Center, Dr. Robert Sheets. Audio and videotapes of Press Club luncheons are available through the National Press Club Library or by calling 1-800-952-TAPE. If you have any questions for our speaker, please write them on the cards provided at your table and pass them up to me. I'll ask as many as time permits. Today's guest needs no introduction. She's as well known and probably more popular than the President of the United States. Still, a few myths need to be dispelled about Janet Reno, an American political figure who seems to sometimes loom larger than life. Number one, she did not wrestle alligators as a girl in the wilds west of Miami. That was her mother, Jane Wood. A writer who believed in participatory journalism. Number two, she did not hold the Bible before herself at her swearing in as U.S. Attorney General on March 12th. That was her niece, whose name is also Janet Reno, thus the confusion in some photo captions. Third, that wasn't Reno's physique in a recent issue of Spy magazine, which labeled her Mother Justice and showed her with bulging biceps. She's big, but not that big. And yes, for those of you who don't know, she prefers to be called Janet or Ms. Reno, not General. Today, in her first appearance at the National Press Club, we hope is her first appearance, we'll get a chance to size up the person the Washington Post has called arguably the most popular member of the Clinton cabinet. Not bad for a third round pick. But after years of having the Justice Department run by political cronies of a president, the agency is now run by a seasoned former prosecutor, widely viewed as having her feet on the ground and in touch with the needs and concerns of ordinary citizens. Indeed, Reno is plowing ahead on the agenda as she has shaped based on her 15 years as a state prosecutor in Miami, one of the toughest jurisdictions in the country. She's pushing Congress and the President to examine some hot-button issues in a different way, dealing more firmly with domestic violence and child support, reforming the minimum mandatory sentencing guidelines so punishment again more closely reflects the crime, and protecting access to abortion clinics. The latter goal's controversy was reflected as recently as last night when Operation Rescue staged a vigil outside her office. After her speech, we will have our traditional question and answer session, but I'll warn you, make them good. Ms. Reno has a notoriously short fuse when it comes to uninformed questioners. And I'm going to be doing the questioning, so please make them good. After she spent nearly an hour with a group of visiting high school seniors a few weeks ago, she congratulated them for reaffirming my faith in students' abilities to ask better questions than reporters. And this from a woman whose mother and father were both reporters. Ladies and gentlemen, pardon me this one time, but I'd like to introduce General Janet Reno.
Thank you very much. It is a very great honor to be here today, considering the family from whence I came, especially. And I would like to share with you a scene that I will never forget that summarizes much of my feeling about where we go in America and what we do. It was on the late afternoon of April the 19th of this year. I walked in to a press conference in which television cameramen, commentators, reporters looked at me as if they were a bunch of hungry wolves. Their questions came fast, furious, angry. Their faces were angry as they pounded the questions at me. What spin do you think people are going to put on this? How will this be perceived? Is your job on the line? They almost roared at me. But about halfway through that press conference, I suddenly started looking at faces that had changed. And there was care, there was understanding, there was sensitivity, there was support, there was encouragement. The questions were still hard questions, but they weren't angry questions, because it was almost as if we had become together, immersed in one horrible tragedy, to which in many cases there were no answers, but we still had to ask the questions to understand this mind that had caused this. There was no longer competition between that press corps out there and me, but we were trying to understand together. We were trying to understand what each one of us would have done had they been standing in my shoes. We were trying to understand life and all its complexities. For as long as I live, as I deal with the press, I will never forget that afternoon. And it carried me through into the evening to other commentators. I was encouraged by the spirit that went with me. They weren't pulling any punches, but there was a spirit of let's talk together, let's question together, you be accountable, but let's probe, let's try to understand, let's get to the ultimate truth. And by the end of the evening, I was having my hardest question asked by a man who came in beforehand and said, "May I get you a cup of tea, and you need some lemon?" And Mr. Koppel asked me whether I would resign, but I know why he did it, and I received the nicest letter from him later. We can ask the hard questions about life and about public officials' performance, and we can do it in a thoughtful and constructive way that achieves the two goals that we share. One, a true, free and informed press, and two, a government that is truly a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, in which its public officials are accountable to the people. I knew before, and I know better now, that I must continue to be as open as I possibly can. I'm very proud of what our Office of Public Affairs has done in terms of trying to respond to your inquiries. Carl Stern is a wonderful person to have around me because I know that he's going to furnish you the truth. We've got hotlines, and I'm about coming close to giving you my home phone number. Because I've discovered it wouldn't do any good anyway, because I'm not there. I've asked Carl to try to set up regular weekly meetings with the press. I'm trying to be as accountable as I can. The group of experts that we've assembled together with the Department of Treasury, met today to begin the review of Waco. We want to have independent, focused scrutiny on this issue. We want to be accountable for what the Department of Justice has done over the years in Innslaw. We've asked for responses by August 1st for suggestions and ideas and thoughts that people have as to further inquiries that should be made. We want to do everything we can to work with the press of America to explore your policy papers on maintaining an informed democracy and on making the Department of Justice as open and as accessible to the people as possible. I come from a state that has probably the most open government in the country. We have a sunshine law. We have cameras in the courtroom. We have a strict public records law. And I think if there is any reason why I stand here before you as Attorney General today, it's because I had to account to the people. I had to be open. I had to let them know why I did things and why I didn't do things. And I want to try to continue to do that, working with you in the Department of Justice. That's oftentimes a difficult role because there are too many of you in this room who have heard me say, no comment, that's a pending investigation. No comment, we're going to litigate that case in the courts, not in the headlines. No comment, but I will comment when the matter is over and I will be accountable. I want to be accountable to Congress. I want to be able to work with staff and go to the Hill and not have any pride of protocol in developing a good, spirited discussion between both Republicans and Democrats about so many matters that concern this entire nation. I want to try to be as direct and understandable as possible. I don't do spin. I want to try to use small, old words that everyone understands. I want to say no when I can't do something. I want to be as honest and direct as I can. And people say, well, what's going to happen? I got elected 5 times trying to be as honest and direct as I can. And what the American people, I think, want more than anything else in the world are not shaded and false promises, but honest, candid, direct answers as to what you can do and can't do. They appreciate, I don't know, when you don't know. They appreciate yes to a long question when yes will suffice more than 3 sentences. I want to provide a vision of where we need to go in America, but put in terms that everybody can understand. Alphabet agencies, Roman numerals, jargons, the jargon of the appropriations process, I'm still having trouble understanding. And you haven't helped me very much. I want to be a good manager, and being a good manager is not sometimes the most popular thing to do, particularly when you are managing a department of 95,000 people with law enforcement, prosecution, prisons, and immigration all part of its responsibility. I want to make sure that we get the American people get every return on their dollars. I want to understand who's doing what in the Department of Justice and who is doing what in U.S. attorneys' offices around the country. I want to approach everything in the department with one overriding question: what's the right thing to do? That's not an easy answer sometimes. Harry Truman said it's easy to do the right thing. It's awful tough to know what the right thing to do is. But we learn what the right thing to do is by going back to that afternoon when the anger faded and the questions continued to come, but came with thoughtfulness, with concern, with care, as we all tried to reach what the truth was, what the right thing to do was. I want to be myself, And it doesn't help to have something like Doonesbury start the morning. I'm sure God is at this point very angry with Gary Trudeau. Because I'm not anything different than what you see. I am a 54-year-old, awkward old maid who is not a great speaker. I can be impatient. I do have a temper. My mother accused me of mumbling. I am not a good housekeeper. I don't put much priority on housekeeping. I have trouble delegating sometimes, and that becomes difficult when you come from an office of 900 to 95,000. People have told me already in my office that I'm too trusting about Washington. My fifth grade teacher said I was bossy. My family thinks I'm opinionated and sometimes arrogant. And they would be happy to supply you with other warts that I have too. But in trying to speak in simple terms, in trying to be open, and trying to be myself, you sometimes make it difficult. You've created a myth of this lady from the swamps. And it's fascinating to watch how you created it from an obituary written by Marguerite Fichtner, suddenly spun 2 months later into the leads of so many stories around the nation. You've got to make sure that you dispel the myth and engage in revisionist history before it gets too far down the line. You have got to ask me hard questions. You've got to help puncture the myth. But as I told Meg Greenfield, when you're about to do it, please call me the day before so I don't get hit up on the side of the head with a 2x4 without knowing it's coming. You make it very difficult because too often you try to make somebody something they're not. I go to a television station here, one of the network stations, and I'm told I just have to put on makeup. And I said, but I don't wear that stuff. Well, you have to have your hair done. Well, I don't do it. I just look myself. Well, it won't look that good on TV, like I can't go on their TV network unless I look good. So as not to offend the person who did my makeup and fix my hair, I want to tell you that I never got so many glowing comments, not about the stuff and substance I said on the Brinkley Show, but how magnificent my hair looked. You make it very difficult to talk about real substance when you come back to me with your first question being, but Ms. Reno, aren't people going to say that you're soft on crime? Why would they say I'm soft on crime after I've just got through saying I want to put the career criminal away and keep them away and let there be truth in sentencing? They ask me that question without asking me, well, what about 0 to 3? Dr. So-and-so says that that might not be the most formative years. Nobody has asked me much about the stuff and substance of a children's agenda. They've just asked me, how will it play? How will it spin? We've got to get out of the spin business and into the substance business. You love to you love to stir up fights. A member of my family, very close to me, happening to be one of your number, reminds me of what you all do. You try to get Bernie Nussbaum and I to pick a fight with each other. Well, first of all, I decided that I was bigger than Bernie, so that wasn't going to work. But now I've decided that Bernie Nussbaum is one of the sweetest guys in the whole wide world, and you just have got to stop making us appear to be fighting, because we're not. And as far as the President of the United States is concerned, I met him for the first time on February the 9th, and I was impressed with him being one of the most intelligent, caring, warm, and informed people that I had met in most of my life. And I think that 5 and 10 times over now. So let's get rid of the fights. You love shorthand issues. Even the print media loves to shorthand the issues. You want instant answers. You want instant solutions. You contribute to the hype and the spin. You discourage. People try to involve a wide range of people in a careful search for important positions. And then they get spit up and chewed and spit out right in front of all the American people. And you cause people to be afraid to try and afraid to put their name in the hat. When a person fails, their failure is disastrously portrayed across the papers and the televisions of this country. So people think, why should I get into that business? And then if they do get into that business, they discover rather than really trying to achieve a vision of something that matters to this nation, it's better to do it in 30-second sound bites and with carefully crafted press statements that go to small issues and not the great vision that's necessary for America. You confuse, as I have mentioned, with your alphabet jargon, with the failure sometimes to describe arcane processes. You get too specialized. I'm surrounded by Department of Justice correspondents, and it's difficult to try to get them to look beyond the Department of Justice to children's issues, to issues that involve us all. It's difficult to get them to start linking with education, with the Department of Labor, with HUD, with the Department of HHS. And yet we all have got to do that. One of the things that we're trying to do is to reach out to other agencies and form real partnerships. I too long would spend time at meetings in Miami where there would be five different federal agencies represented, five different agencies doing five different things, never talking to each other, never coordinating their programs so that they got the best return on the dollars and the best impact on what they were trying to do anywhere. We've got to begin in Washington by linking ourselves together and using the federal resources in ways that can make a difference. We're doing that now in the area of youth violence, where we've had several meetings in terms of trying to develop both a criminal justice response, a public health response, and an educational response to youth violence that can make a difference. We're trying to do it in terms of the whole problem of immigration, recognizing that immigration cannot be focused in one isolated way, but has to be linked with the Department of State, with diplomatic initiatives, with economic issues, with law enforcement issues, because they all come together as one whole. And all of us have got to see beyond the bounds of our narrowly focused departments and link these issues together. We've got to work with local law enforcement in linking federal agencies too often going in different directions at the same time with local law enforcement so that we use the limited dollars we have in the wisest way possible. Too many of you specialize in Washington, and you don't know what is happening in the communities throughout America. You do not even know what is happening in your own community because too many of you go out Massachusetts Avenue or Connecticut Avenue and never go the other way and never go to that elementary school where children were afraid after the drive-by shooter. Don't go to that area around the swimming pool. Don't become absorbed in your community and understand the strength, the diversity, and the magnificence of so many people out there. Recently, I was asked by a reporter who knew I was going to another city, are you going to do anything newsworthy when you go to Boston? I said, I'm going to Boston to talk to people about what I've been talking about, and I'm going to learn from people, and I'm going to meet people, and I'm going to meet students and business leaders and other people who care, and I'm going to draw strength and knowledge from them. I did it in Miami. There was never any press around. I would go to different groups, speak to different groups, speak to elementary schools and senior citizens groups. There is such strength, there is such knowledge there of people who want to provide a give and take. And somehow or another, the press and the media of America has got to get out beyond the city halls, beyond the county commissions, the state legislatures, and the Capitol, out to the people of America again. I know you. I spent my mornings waking up at about 6 o'clock in the morning to a man who would start at 5:30 in the morning with a list, calling one police agency after another, one source of news after another. "Hi, this is Reno of the Herald. Do you have anything going?" He never spun it. He never engaged in hype. But then there was somebody else who was part and parcel of my life, who appeared on the front page of the Miami News in her mother's blue linen dress, carrying her mother's gloves, wearing a phony diamond ring, and wearing her mother's floppy hat. And the headline said, "Driving a borrowed Cadillac, wearing a phony diamond ring, I bought babies for the Kefauver Committee." That was my mother, who made news sometimes more often than she reported news. And I would not like to be on the receiving end of one of some of my brother's columns. I'm told that I should expect to be. My grandfather was the chief photographer of the Herald, who photographed Miami becoming a great city. And to look at those pictures represent a history and a keen sense of people and place that is remarkable. And I had an aunt who was a music critic for the Herald, who I think helped bring Miami into prominence as a great city of the arts. I know you, and I know that you care so passionately about your country, about your Constitution, about the First Amendment. But I know more than anything else, because I have known you, that you care passionately about the people of America and how we reach the solution to the problems that we all face in this extraordinarily complex time. I'd like to issue you a challenge to all Americans, a challenge to Congress, a challenge to defense attorneys, a challenge to all who have traditionally been at each end of the spectrum of debate. Let us go back to the last half of that press conference, where the anger faded, where the questions continued as hard as ever, but were caring, thoughtful, probing questions. Let us continue to be accountable to each other. Let us be objective and honest. And understand that this is the most complex time in the history of the world. Our borders have shrunk. There are incredible burdens placed on everyone. There is poverty amid extraordinary plenty. Let us look beyond our narrow worlds of newspaper reporter, attorney general, and understand that the solutions to our problems are going to be achieved in common sense ways, with small, old values. It's like raising children. It's the most difficult job of all. It takes common sense, hard work, intelligence, and an awful lot of luck. You've got to punish, but punish fairly. You've got to make sure the punishment is carried out. But you've got to also understand that as you punish, you've got to provide a nurturing environment where that child can grow as a strong, constructive human being. We've got to respect others. Too often in these last years, we have come to disrespect our colleagues, disrespect the opposition. We can disagree and still be remarkably civil and caring. We should not spend more than we have. And we should understand that if we've got one electric frying pan, we don't have to get another version of the electric frying pan and have two different systems when one can do just as well. We have to build government at every level in the right way. And most of all, we've got to encourage everyone to public service. As you write that article, damning the public servant, cast it in terms that still creates in the young people of America a feeling that they want to come to Washington, that they want to go to the state capitol, that they want to serve in every way they possibly can. Somehow or another, working together, we can bring the magic of this city back to America, the magic of public service back to America, the magic of serving the people back to America. Thank you.